Welcome to XY Files Podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotlov, MD, the founder of Vidma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. This is episode 16 of 18 in our low testosterone series. Last time we covered alternatives to TRT and clomiphene, HCG lifestyle and fertility preserving options. Today we're getting into TRT formulations. Injections versus gel and dosing. Last episode was really about restraint. A lot of men hear low testosterone and jump straight to treatment names, in clomiphene, HCG, TRT. Maybe a guy on the internet swears by one of them and now everybody is an expert by dinner. The key point from that episode was simple. If LH and FSH are low or normal, and especially if LH is below 8, many men should be evaluated for enclomiphene first, not pushed straight into TRT. That matters because once you understand who actually needs TRT, then the formulation question becomes useful. Until then, it's like arguing about tires before you've decided whether the car even needs a new engine. One of the mistakes I see almost every week is that a man comes in asking, "Should I do shots or gel?" And nobody has checked LH and FSH. Or free testosterone, or sometimes even repeated the testosterone level correctly in the morning. That is backwards. The first decision is not product choice. It is whether you truly have male hypogonadism, which means persistent symptoms plus biochemical evidence, and whether the pattern points to primary hypogonadism or secondary hypogonadism. Remember from earlier in the series, high LH plus low testosterone usually means primary hypogonadism. The brain is yelling, the testes are not answering. That is the man who often really does need testosterone replacement. Low or normal LH plus low testosterone points towards secondary hypogonadism. The signaling is weak, but the testes may still be capable of responding. In that situation, enclomiphene is usually the first line option, especially when LH is below 8 and fertility matters. Same low testosterone number, very different treatment path. I had a patient not long ago, early 40s, successful, busy, sleeping badly, gaining abdominal fat, libido down, workouts flat. Pretty standard modern American male biography. He had one outside total testosterone result that was low enough to scare him, and he was ready to start injections immediately. We repeated morning testing, measured LH and FSH, and checked free testosterone directly with equilibrium dialysis and LC-MS/MS. His LH was low normal. That changed everything. He did not need replacement first. He needed the right diagnosis first. Men get into trouble when treatment starts to outrun classification. At Vidma, we care a lot about testing quality because bad inputs create bad treatment plans. We use morning blood draws from 7 to 11 a.m. We measure total testosterone by LC-MS/MS and free testosterone directly by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS/MS. We prioritize free testosterone because total testosterone can look acceptable while free testosterone is clearly deficient. The man feels lousy, the total number looks fine, and everybody shrugs. That is how hidden deficiency gets missed. We do not order a separate SHBG test because direct free testosterone testing gives us the answer without playing math games with binding proteins. And the baseline panel is not just testosterone. It includes LH and FSH, always. Also estradiol, CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, vitamin D, PSA for men age 40 and up, and insulin when BMI is over 25. When clinically indicated, we may add prolactin, TSH, or a lipid panel. Our working thresholds when symptoms persist are 350 nanograms per deciliter for total testosterone and 100 picograms per milliliter for free testosterone. Not as decoration, not as trivia, as decision points in a clinical picture. When I was earlier in training, I used to think the formulation choice was the interesting part. injections, gels, long-acting shots. Very practical, very tangible. I was wrong. The interesting part is the physiology, because the physiology tells you whether TRT is even the right tool. If you give testosterone from outside the body, the brain notices. GnRH falls. LH and FSH fall. The testes get less instruction to make testosterone and sperm. That is why TRT can improve symptoms in the right man and also suppress spermatogenesis in the same breath. Same mechanism, different consequence.
That is also why TRT is not fertility neutral. It suppresses the very signals that support sperm production. Libido can go up while fertility goes down. Men confuse those all the time. Sexual performance and sperm production are related, but they are not the same thing. A stronger sex drive does not mean your fertility is protected. Biology is often less sentimental than people would prefer. So what is TRT actually doing? It is replacement. It raises serum testosterone into a therapeutic range. In the testosterone trials, which used gel in older hypogonadal men, dosing was adjusted to keep testosterone roughly between 280 and 873 nanograms per deciliter. Those studies showed meaningful improvements in sexual activity, sexual desire, and erectile function in men who had low testosterone to begin with. That last part matters. The benefit was shown in men with documented deficiency, not in men with normal levels looking for a performance upgrade before beach season. TRT also does not repair the cause of hypogonadism. It replaces what is missing. For primary hypogonadism, that is often exactly what you need. If the testes are failing, stimulating them harder does not solve much. But for functional or secondary hypogonadism, especially the kind tied to obesity, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, poor sleep, or certain medications, the axis is often suppressed rather than broken. That is where enclomiphene becomes so useful. It works upstream, helping the body restore its own testosterone production while preserving fertility and testicular function. And yes, lifestyle matters too, but the testosterone increase from lifestyle alone is often modest, and weight regain is common. Real life is not a motivational poster. Now to the part most men ask about first anyway, formulations. Educationally, TRT comes in several forms. The most common comparisons are short-acting injections, long-acting injections, and transdermal gels. There are also oral testosterone undecanoate products, plus less common routes like nasal, buccal, or pellets. Each has trade-offs. None of them are magic. Some just fit a particular man's life, risk profile, or diagnosis better than others. Short-acting injectable testosterone, usually enanthate or cypionate, has classically been prescribed around 250 milligrams every 2 to 3 weeks. That schedule tends to create a fast rise and then a noticeable trough before the next dose. Men often describe it in very human terms. I felt amazing for a few days, then normal, then flat. That is not imagination. That is pharmacokinetics. A hormone level that surges and then tapers tends to feel like a less stable ride. If you have ever driven a car with someone who only knows full gas and full brake, you already understand the basic concept. Long-acting injectable testosterone undecanoate is different. Typical dosing is 1,000 milligrams every 10 to 14 weeks. The appeal is steadier exposure and fewer dosing events. For some men, that is attractive. Fewer appointments, fewer reminders, less roller coaster. The downside is reversibility. If a problem shows up, elevated hematocrit, edema, some other adverse effect, you cannot simply make it disappear the next morning. The drug is in the system and it stays there for a while. Convenience is nice. So is having an exit door. Transdermal gels are usually dosed at 50 to 100 milligrams daily, depending on the product and response. They create a steadier day-to-day exposure, which a lot of men tolerate well. Think of gel as a more continuous drip feed rather than a periodic dump. That steadiness is one reason gels were used in the testosterone trials. The practical annoyance is daily application, and the more important clinical issue is transference. If the gel is not applied correctly, allowed to dry, and covered appropriately, some of it can transfer to a partner or a child through skin contact. If you have small kids climbing on you after dinner, that risk stops being theoretical very quickly. Gels have another technical detail people often miss. Blood timing matters. Serum testosterone is typically checked 2 to 4 hours after application. If you ignore that and draw at a random time, you can make a perfectly good dose look too low or too high. Then the dose gets changed for the wrong reason, and everybody wonders why the patient feels off. A surprising amount of hormone medicine is just respecting timing. Not glamorous, but useful.
Oral testosterone undecanoate exists too. It avoids injections, which some men appreciate, but absorption depends heavily on dietary fat, so exposure can be less predictable. Some US products also carry warnings about blood pressure increases, which makes patient selection important. Then there are nasal formulations, buccal systems, and pellets. These can fit specific preferences, but the evidence base and practical use are narrower than for injections and gels. When men start comparing every formulation on the market, it can sound like an enthusiast forum for coffee grinders. Tiny differences, strong opinions, and occasionally, somebody forgot the basic question. The question most men really mean is not which formulation exists, it is what am I likely to feel and what is the risk? That is where injections versus gel becomes a practical conversation. Short-acting injections often mean more fluctuation. Some men like the early peak, some men hate the late trough. Gels usually mean steadier levels and easier dose reversal, but you need daily adherence and careful application. If you are the kind of man who forgets a daily medication next to his toothbrush, the gel plan may be optimistic. If you hate fluctuations and value stability, gel may make more sense than you expect. There is also the hematocrit issue. Hematocrit is the percentage of your blood made up by red blood cells. Testosterone therapy can push that up. When it rises too far, blood gets more viscous, and that is not a lab detail you ignore. Elevated hematocrit, or erythrocytosis, is the most common adverse effect of TRT. Short-acting injectable testosterone tends to be associated with that more often than gels. A lot of men think injections are stronger. That is not quite the right frame. They are more likely to create higher peaks, and those peaks can carry more red cell stimulation. Different delivery pattern, different risk pattern. That is why clinicians do not choose formulations based only on convenience. Reversibility matters. Risk profile matters. Adherence matters. Fertility goals matter. And again, diagnosis matters first. If a man has low testosterone with high LH, primary hypogonadism is likely, and replacement is often the correct strategy. If he has low testosterone with low or normal LH, especially under 8, enclomiphene is usually the better first-line option because the testes may still respond. We use that approach every day. VIDMA does not prescribe testosterone injections or other TRT products, but understanding TRT is still important because some men truly need replacement, and many more have been told they do when they do not. For men who do start TRT elsewhere, safety screening should happen before the first dose, not after problems develop. TRT is contraindicated in men with an active desire for children, hematocrit of 54% or higher, untreated breast cancer, locally advanced or metastatic prostate cancer, or poorly controlled congestive heart failure. There are also men who deserve extra caution, such as those with severe urinary symptoms, very high baseline hematocrit, or a clotting history in the family. None of this is meant to be dramatic. It is just medicine done in the right order. Monitoring matters too.
We repeat labs after the first month of treatment, then every 6 months. That includes testosterone levels, hematocrit, and other indicated safety labs like a CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, estradiol, and PSA when appropriate. This is where sloppiness shows up. Some men are started on testosterone and then basically told, "See you whenever." That is not monitoring. That is hope with paperwork. The cardiovascular fear around TRT deserves a sober answer, not a tribal one. The best large randomized data we have come from the TRAVERSE trial, which followed about 5,200 men for roughly 33 months. Testosterone therapy was non-inferior to placebo for major cardiovascular events. In plain English, that means the trial did not show an increase in major cardiovascular risk compared with placebo in the population studied. It also did not show an increase in prostate cancer risk over the follow-up period. Reassuring, yes. Permission to stop monitoring, no. Safety data should calm exaggeration, not replace judgment.
And TRT alone does not prevent or treat type 2 diabetes. It is not a metabolic cure, not a bodybuilding shortcut, and not a general anti-aging solution for men with normal testosterone. If a man's levels are normal, the evidence does not support prescribing testosterone because he feels vaguely tired and saw a social media clip about optimization. A lot of vague symptoms live in the territory of sleep, stress, depression, overtraining, alcohol, body fat, medications, and ordinary life. Testosterone is important. It is not the explanation for everything. A few common misconceptions come up over and over. First, I had one low testosterone result, so TRT is next. No. A single number does not diagnose hypogonadism. Symptoms plus biochemical deficiency, confirmed with reliable morning testing, and LH and FSH measured alongside testosterone. That is the minimum. Men get overtreated when the diagnosis is treated like a screenshot instead of a syndrome. Second, injections are always better than gel. Better for what? If you mean fewer dosing days, sometimes yes. If you mean more stable levels, usually no, especially with short-acting regimens. If you mean lower hematocrit risk, again, no. If you mean easier to stop quickly when something goes wrong, definitely no compared with gel. There is no universal winner. There is only a better fit for a specific man. Third, long-acting shots are the best place to start because they are convenient. Maybe, maybe not. In a man with higher baseline risk, or in a man where you are still learning how he responds, shorter-acting or more easily reversible options can be smarter. The first formulation is not just about convenience. It is about how much room you want for course correction. Fourth, TRT won't affect fertility if I feel good on it. That is probably the misconception that causes the most regret. TRT suppresses LH and FSH. Lower LH and FSH can suppress sperm production. If you want children now, or even maybe later, that needs to be part of the treatment decision before the prescription, not after 6 months of surprise. Fifth, if testosterone helps deficient men, more must help normal men. Medicine would be simpler if biology worked like a pre-workout label. It doesn't. The trials showing benefit were done in symptomatic men with low testosterone, not in men whose labs were normal and whose expectations were ambitious. More is not automatically better. Sometimes more is just more side effects and a higher hematocrit. A few practical takeaways before we wrap up. First, if you are being evaluated for low testosterone, insist on the right diagnostic frame. Morning labs, total testosterone, direct free testosterone, LH and FSH. Without that, you cannot properly classify primary versus secondary hypogonadism. And without classification, you cannot choose the right treatment. Second, if LH is low or normal, and especially if it is below 8, ask whether enclomiphene is the more appropriate first step. For many men with secondary or functional hypogonadism, it is. It preserves fertility, maintains testicular function, and works with the body's own signaling rather than shutting it down.
Third, if TRT is actually indicated, think in terms of stability, reversibility, and monitoring, not just convenience. Short-acting injections can swing. Long-acting injections are steadier but slow to withdraw. Gels are steady and easier to stop, but application and transfer precautions matter. Fourth, whatever route is chosen, follow-up is part of treatment. 1 month after starting, then every 6 months. Check hematocrit. Check testosterone. Review symptoms. Adjust with data, not mood. This is one of those topics where the internet likes certainty more than medicine does. Real hormone care is more boring than that. More careful. More sequential. First, confirm the diagnosis. Then classify the cause. Then choose the tool that fits the man in front of you. It is less exciting than a before and after video. It also works better. Next time, we'll get into what to expect after starting treatment, realistic timelines, and monitoring. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you, upload your labs to VIDMA for free or order labs through our special offer at VIDMA.com.